In this week's edition of The Front Page, Dan Skelton is in red hot form as he goes to the Cheltenham Festival. We look at the very troubled situation in the Middle East. We explore an interesting financial development for Ammo Racing. And we ask, why is I Know The Way You're Thinking tumbling in price for the Cheltenham Gold Cup? All that and more on this week's The Front Page. Hello there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. Lots of Cheltenham chat in this week's show. We are 8 days away from the greatest meeting in the racing calendar, but lots more happening as well in the sport, and we'll be looking at many of those issues with myself, Lee Mottershead, and my Racing Post colleagues, Pete Scargill and Liam Head. Hello, gentlemen. We all excited?
Just as one can be, yeah. A few just over a week now to go, so yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, and we had a good weekend of racing. Not a stellar weekend because we're too close to Cheltenham for that, but there was quality fare at Kelso and at Newbury and on the flat in Dubai. Dan Skelton will be expecting to have a big Cheltenham Festival. He'd bring a fantastic sort of horses to Prestbury Park next week, and he limbered up for it in great fashion, winning two of the big races on Saturday. Heltenham won the Greatwood Gold Cup at Newbury, and it was the second time this season though when Dan won a big race at Newbury when he was elsewhere, because at Kelso he won the big steeplechase there with Protectorat, who survived a big mistake at the second last fence to go on to score at prohibitive odds. And Liam, as well as setting him up for a massive Cheltenham Festival challenge, it was also a significant weekend because although we were only at the end of February, Heltenham's win took Dan past his entire prize money total for the whole of last season when he almost, but not nearly, didn't quite nearly win the Trainers' Championship. So I think even Dan is saying that one is now pretty much in the bag.
Yeah, it's another statement of intent from Skelton, who the last couple of seasons would have hurt him more than he's probably letting on. I think he's had big advantages over Willie Mullins in the trainer's title, and Mullins has done what he's done best over the last couple of years and won big races. Obviously, the Grand National has played a part. It will have an impact on the Trainers Championship, but Skelton is. Probably too far ahead now, I think, even by Willie Mullins' standards, to be caught. So I think, given that the season he's had, I think what's important is the fact that even though he's had these sort of two disappointing ends to the season from his standards by not lifting the trophy, he's come out and bettered himself, and he's done it so early as well. I think he's obviously a key target trainer, and I think he's just only improved from season to season, and that can be that's a huge sort of cap in it, feather in his cap.
Yeah, and especially on horse to Protectorat, he always delivers, doesn't he? He's a great old character.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as well as these younger sort of protagonists coming through from the Skelton Yard, obviously he's invested quite heavily in the next generation coming through. He can rely on the sort of the old boys, Protectorat, Heltenham, like you said, winning the Greatwood Gold Cup for a second time as well. Just shows you that he can do it sort of at all levels, really.
Other people picked winning, though, as well at Kelso. Captain Hugo won the third most valuable handicap hurdle stage in Britain, the Moor Battle.
You like that step?
I like that.
I can see from your face you like
it's,
that. You know that.
It's step. A great catchy marketing line, isn't it? Third most valuable handicap stage in Britain. Big win again, and another big win for Philip Hobbs and Jonathan White, who are having quietly but productively a really good season.
Yeah, they're rolling forward this season, aren't they? They've really got some momentum behind them. So they've got some interesting horses for Cheltenham. I think that, time of recording, they're up at about 25% strike rate.
Yeah.
So it's where you'd like to be going into Cheltenham, isn't it? With some nice sort of each way shots in those races. And talking about target trainers, Philip Hobbs has been brilliant at that for years. So him and Jonathan White are in good form at the right time of year, Lee.
The right time of year. Sober Glory could be a supreme contender.
Yes, it could be. There's lots of supreme contenders.
There are.
So I'm sure we'll discuss later on. But yeah, they've got a good team of horses like that for the week. They're not going in with a red hot shot, but they're going in with lots of nice horses with nice chances. And if they're in form as well, those horses are going to be competitive.
And before we move on to the flat, there were nice performances too from young horses trained by Tom Lacey at Kelso, Jeremy Scott at Newbury. Some nice talent coming through.
Absolutely, and a nice spread of people getting involved as well. So it's encouraging to see so many trainers in good form going into the meeting this year, particularly if you are a person who takes interest in the old Prestbury Cup, which doesn't really exist, but we like to talk up in the media in advance of the meeting.
Little way there, little insight into how the media works. Also big day on Saturday for the Crisford, Simon and Ed, because at Maidan on their Super Saturday card, massive trouble for them. Maidan won the big race there on the dirt. It's one of three winners for the Crisford. That must be as good a day as they've had in Maidan. Not a Group 1 success, but in terms of, you know, numbers of big race winners.
Well, to land three big races, two in the colours of Sheikh Ahmed and one for their Coolmore partners, Super Saturday, you know, possibly you've got a horse who's going to develop into a nice dirt performer for them, and they've got history with the Dubai World Cup, for example, and good performers on the dirt. It's a yard that routinely operates at high levels through the summer in Europe, and they were landing the right blows and getting Sheikh Mohammed dancing with his stick at the race course. So what more could you want?
Well, exactly, and you know, really inspired, because at Maidan, he was out there in Oz when I was there for the Melbourne Cup, and if someone had said at that point, after he was beaten in that race, that he'd be going to a mile and a quarter dirt race in Dubai and winning it so impressively, you wouldn't have seen that one coming.
Even in all your years, Lee, you wouldn't have, that wouldn't cross your mind as a possibility, no?
Not that many years. Rebel Romance, he's a star, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just the gift that keeps on giving. And it was quite nice. I think it's even surprised Charlie Appleby how he continues to keep doing it on the top stage. You know, he was quite emotional after.
Really was, wasn't he?
Yeah. Which was sort of, you don't normally see that side of Charlie Appleby. I think it's just given. I mean, this horse has seen it all, and you know, and won the lot. Like, I mean, I was in Doha a couple of years ago when he won the Amir Trophy, and you kind of thought that his ceiling had been reached at that point, and that was 2 years ago. So the fact that he's still sort of playing his trade at the top level and putting in these performances, you know, William Buick's obviously got a great relationship with the horse. You just don't know when his sort of top level win is going to end.
No. He's a bit of a throwback, isn't he, for all of us? When Godolphin first came on the scene, and it had all of these
the Swains, the Marion Barts, the Day Lamis.
Exactly, these brilliant older middle distance horses that go all around the world winning big races with Frankie and what have you. That's what Rebel's Romance almost embodies in a way. Godolphin's very different these days in terms of how it operates, but it's great to see the longevity, the adaptability of him. He's a credit to everyone involved.
Yeah, it really is. Actually, the other end of the age spectrum, producer Sam was in the studio earlier on, talking about Toast of New York, a Godolphin three-year-old who was beaten on Saturday, but ran an eye-catching race for the 2,000 guineas, potentially.
Well, it's this time of year that, you know, you guys are focusing on Cheltenham.
Yeah.
There's classic horses.
Craven, Your Honour.
Popping out all over the place, Lee. You've got to have your eyes in the back of your head, mate.
Okay, right, okay. More importantly, actually, of course, measurably more important, was what's going on at Maidan away from the racing. Because extensive coverage across the Racing Post today about the situation in the Middle East. And that has also impacted racing. People who were there on Saturday talking about missiles flying overhead. We saw pictures of a hotel in flames in Dubai. Although Sheikh Mohammed did go racing on Saturday, which I think would have been reassuring for a lot of people there. But a lot of people, I mean, they're stranded. Trainers, jockeys, racing staff, horses. Extraordinary situation.
Yeah, I imagine the uncertainty is as much of a cause for concern as anything. I appreciate this. Missiles raining down is one thing, but people don't know what's going on, when they'll be able to get home, what the circumstances are around. Obviously, there's a big meeting in Bahrain this week, supposedly, with missiles landing on the US naval base there. You know, who knows what's going to happen with that. Scott Burton in particular has done excellent work on this the last couple of days. the people talk about how well they've sort of been looked after out there in this sort of changing situation. So that uncertainty and what's going on when people get home, I'm sure, is causing a great deal of concern.
Yeah, and there is no part of the world in many ways that the global racing industry is more dependent on than the Middle East. And seeing that sort of event taking place across the whole region at the moment is disturbing.
Yeah, 100%. You know, with the sport relies heavily on the investment, as you said, from the Middle East. And, you know, especially this time of year when there's, well, obviously we had Super Saturday just gone, there's the big meeting in Bahrain coming up, and of course not too in the future is the Dubai World Cup as well. So there's a lot of uncertainty at the minute, and you know, let's hope that for the sake of everyone who's out there, they're able to get home in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, Pete, before we finish talking about events on the world stage, you wanted to mention a big weekend for Harry Bentley.
Did, yeah. So Harry Bentley rode his biggest winner since he's been in Hong Kong. He's been in Hong Kong for a while as an expat. Yeah. You know, one of the early ones of an ever-increasing UK jockey sort of group out there. So yeah, Stormy Grove in the colours of Mark Chan. One is going to go for the Hong Kong Derby, or being built up for the Hong Kong Derby. So $1.2 million race. Congratulations to Harry. You know, he's built himself a life out there, and you know, a big win for him. So I thought we should mark it, Lee.
Absolutely, and beautifully marked too.
Thank you.
We will be talking about Cheltenham later in the show. Liam will be giving you some of his biggest anti-post hopes. The first one, I might mention one or two of mine if you're interested. But before we get to that, there is another big story that has been brewing for days now. We had the Willy Won'ty about Constitution Hill and the Champion Hurdle. That one got resolved. The Willy Won'ty regarding Lord Allen and the BHA, well, it's not quite as dramatic in that there seems to be an assumption that, yes, he will, in that he will be leaving the BHA anytime soon. As we're recording this on late Monday morning, there's a BHA board meeting today. There's an expectation that Lord Allen's departure from the BHA will be announced at some point today. Pete, if it is, it brings to an end a short but extremely sorry saga for British racing.
Yeah, sorry, isn't it? Sorry is the right word, because, I mean, nothing has been achieved apart from wasting time.
Yeah.
And it's a microcosm of all of the issues that people talk about in this sport and what's hampering it. So you've got the two stakeholder groups, for want of a better term, agree to bring this guy in. He's going to make change. He's going to be close to the government, all this kind of stuff, helpful for the sport. He comes in and says, right, I want my independent board. We have this sort of extended period before he joins. And everyone says, fine, you crack on. We'll agree with that. And then the BHA, you know, Lord Allen come in with this, you know, maybe they get ahead of themselves, perhaps not understanding the delicacy of the situation around, I mean, race day data, right? So, who'd have thought?
Absolutely.
We'd have written and talked so much about, yeah. You think we talked about Constitution Hill a lot, Liam? Race day data rights, honestly. And then you've got the two sides, your race courses on one side, licensed personnel, owners and breeders on the other side, putting in opposite directions. I mean, I just don't know how anyone can look at that and say things are working well, which is, of course, what you've written about today, Lee. Who comes in next to this joyous arena have a go at things?
Because, Liam, who would want to come in next? You've got a situation whereby the...
make it Constitution Hill, put him in charge.
But yeah, he'd do it. But you know, as Pete said, you had the participants in the race courses, senior figures, came together to decide that this was the right person. They hired him because he was a change agent.
And a great CV.
A great CV. They hired a change agent, but they didn't like the change he wanted to make. But in effect, they're getting rid of him. That's what we're expecting to have happened, and might have happened by the time you see this already. If you are someone who might be approached with any sort of reputation for the BHA chair role, why would you want to take it? Seeing what happened with Lord Allen, why would you want to potentially damage your own reputation? And why would you want to take a role in which it looks like, if you want to do anything meaningful or significant, you won't get past first base.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's almost becoming quite a poison chalice role, really, now, isn't it? I mean, we had this discussion when Lord Allen was stepping into the role, albeit after a bit of a delay, and we kind of said, well, if this doesn't work, then we're kind of back to square one, and it doesn't fill confidence with the next person, whoever that might be, come in. Because if you come into the role, it's like in anything, if you come into the role and suggest new ideas based on sort of how you've gone through the whole interview process and how you've been selected for the role, and you're not given a position to, or you want to implement these new decisions, and you can't, these decisions don't come to fruition, then it begs the question, well, what's the point of the role, almost?
And they were gushing about him at the time. Oh. When he came in, absolutely gushing about this guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's...
Well, that's it.
How does he... Well, yeah, you know, this is the best guy. Oh, actually, no, he's not the best guy. We were wrong.
Well, that's it. I meant to put the piece at the con today. If you're in the BHA comms team and you wrote all those press releases about how amazing he was, how on earth now do you present... Oh, actually, no. We on reflection, he wants to spend more time with his family. You know, he's decided that this isn't the role. This isn't the role. For how on earth do you try and?
Well, they have to somehow find the reasons why all of a sudden he isn't the right person for the job now, and it just doesn't make any sense. When, like you said, 6 months ago they were saying, "This is the man. This is the one that's going to change anything and help us going forwards." It just screams like the issues. Away further above than the actual role itself.
It does.
What I will say, Lee, is horse racing has been around for a long time.
It has.
And we do tend to find a way forward.
Yes.
So I'm sure out of all of this, they will find something. That's a really heartening message to take forward. It'll be fine, lads, probably. We'll see what happens.
It ain't as bad.
And the other thing is that obviously Bill Barber, our industry editor, has been well across all of this. So if anything happens, Bill will know.
Yes, and you might already know by the time you see this.
Bill will know.
Bill will know, and you might know because it might have happened by now. We might have a new chair by now. As Liam said, it might be Constitution Hill. We don't know what's going to happen. We do know there'll be a Cheltenham Festival in 8 days' time. More on that soon. Before we get there, another interesting story, one of so many interesting stories revealed by Mrs. Scargill over here last few days. Ammo Racing. Now, you have written one or two pieces about Ammo Racing. It's you could well in the past. What's the latest in the Ammo story?
There was just an interesting filing earlier this month on Companies House, where the scope of the loan that was given to Sports Invest Holdings,
which is
the parent company of various companies that Keir Drabchan is director of.
Yeah.
Apollo Global Management, who is this huge New York-based private equity firm that loaned or gave Sports Invest access to funds back at the end of 2024. They'd extended the scope of their loan effectively. So that both means that they've got extra security on the loan now. So, you know, if the loan isn't going the right way, they've got more protection.
Yeah.
But additionally, if you extend the amount that is covered, theoretically you can borrow more money. So given what has been going on with Ammo Racing and Keir Drabchan and his huge ambitions, it struck me as an interesting development. We were also able to report, in the context of this, the financial position that Ammo Racing was in as of the end of 2024. Everybody knows that they spent a huge amount of money in 2024 and continued into 2025. But the idea that they, you know, outstanding creditors were owed 109 million plus, and that had expanded by over 60 million from the March to the December, it just shows you what, A, the level of investment and boldness shown by Drabchan, but equally, you know, what he's up against. I mean, that's a huge amount of money for anyone.
Yeah.
And horse racing isn't known as a great reaper of financial return unless you land on something particularly successful.
A super stallion.
And the fact that we could probably all sit here and name who we would regard as a super stallion shows that it's rare. And obviously, a lot of Kia's investment and his group's investment has been in mares.
Yes.
You know, they've gone down the let's establish a broodmare band. And you know, that's not going to reap you any return anytime soon. So there's a lot at stake, is what I would say.
And it'd be fascinating watching how Ammo fares this year with Frankie Dettori as their global ambassador.
Frankie Dettori.
Nighting horses.
There's lots to keep us interested in the process, whether it's from Frankie or whether it's from Kia Drabchen or whether it's from anyone else in that organisation. But the pressure's on, I would say, Lee.
And the pressure will be on the sports participants and the sports punters next week. Cheltenham Festival Countdown is really gathering pace. Loads of coverage across all our platforms in the Racing Post. Liam, as we move towards it, say 8 days from now, among the more interesting news developments in recent days...
Is it Constitution Hill? Because I know this, Lee.
Really?
I know about Constitution.
Does he run? No? Okay. I know the way you're thinking. Last season's Cheltenham Gold Cup winner, supplemented into the race last year, off a relatively ordinary campaign, and then went and hosed up in the Gold Cup. This year, this season, the campaign has been even worse. He's performed pretty appallingly in most of his race, all his races, really. We don't know if he's heavily backed, but he's been significantly cut in the Gold Cup market in recent days. A fascinating development. He's now sort of 6 to 8 to 1.
Yeah, it's a tricky one to sort of get your head around, really, because obviously I think it was the Savills Chase he was in last.
He failed it knackered.
It didn't really fill you with confidence to scream that he was going to be the back-to-back Gold Cup winner. Yeah. And given how competitive that race is looking out to be. So, yeah, it's a difficult one, really. I mean, we're still not even 100% sure that he's going to turn up at Cheltenham. I mean,
we're not, but Gavin Cromwell was talking, you know, it wasn't about everything has gone well since then.
Yeah.
He's working
pretty
well
positive
now.
He's been.
Yeah, his stable's in better form.
Yeah, so maybe he's done a rattling piece of work at home that we're not aware of, but it's a tricky one. I mean, he wouldn't be the one that I'd be picking as my Gold Cup winner anyway.
No.
Lee, you've spent time with JP McManus and his team.
Yeah.
Like, what is their thought process going to be on this? What is... they're guys that have been involved in the game for a long time. They've got this horse who's the Cheltenham Gold Cup winner, dual Cheltenham Festival winner.
Yeah.
He's done nothing all year.
Yeah.
Like, are they just going to be led by the trainer, or are they going to say, come on, we've got to... How does it work? How does it work to get this horse to Cheltenham?
And I know last year, I did the big read with him last year, when we were having the conversation for the interview, it was the point when he was thinking about supplementing him for the Gold Cup. I remember when you do an interview, you'll be able to know this. Sometimes you get, someone says a line and you think, my God, we can really, you know, go big on that one. And he said to me, he was thinking of supplementing. I know the way you're thinking. And I said, well, you know, why is that? Because I think he can win it.
Hmm.
You know, and straight away he's thinking, wow, dude, that's because at that point, again, he wasn't a horse who looked like an obvious Gold Cup winner. So I suspect that JP, I assume, has been in Barbados during the Gold Cup build-up. He'll have been talking to members of his sort of entourage and team and laying out plans for the festival and working out where something sort of like Mighty Park will run in. But I suspect, with I know the way you're thinking, that they won't know really much more than we know.
Mm.
And I suspect that Gavin Cromwell is giving him positive feedback there now. They know that historically he comes good in the spring because he won the Kim Muir the season before, having had a decent enough campaign, better than the following two.
Yeah, yeah.
But they know how good he's in the spring. I suppose the complicating factor is that if he ran, Factor File would probably start Gold Cup favourite. So they've also got a horse in there who could be favourite for the Gold Cup, who they're not sure will stay. I know last season they didn't think he'd stay the Gold Cup distance, which is why they didn't run him in the race. They ran him in the Ryanair. He hoes up in that. If he goes to the Ryanair, he's probably 4-5, 4-6 shot, assuming Gaelic Warrior goes to the Gold Cup, and there seems to be an assumption that Woody won't run both in the same race. Yeah. I think it's really, but I suspect that the recent market moves would indicate that the Gold Cup plan is now very much.
Yeah. But then that would be Cromwell led rather than.
I suspect so. But I mean, ultimately, everything is JP led in the sense that he will decide which race the horse is running. But I'm sure he would want to be getting some positive feedback from the trainer. But they didn't enter him in the Grand National either. So they haven't got a fallback option of entry. And it was an assumption that he would be in the Grand National this season. He's not. Yeah. So I think if he runs in the Gold Cup, on the one hand, you have to say, his recent form is appalling. How can that horse win?
So bad.
But equally, if they run him in the race, I think they must really think they've got him back.
Well, I think as well, we talk about the form of the horse and how it's been, you know, it's obviously not ideal preparation they've had for this race, if they are going to end up in this race. But he's a winner of the race, so he knows.
And an impressive winner.
So he knows how to do it. But you go to the JP McManus jigsaw at the minute, because there's probably so many sort of things that need to be tied up, because you mentioned.
Factor file.
Spillane's Tower's also in there.
Absolutely. He's probably going to run the Gold Cup.
Yeah, in the Gold Cup. But then on the other hand, you've got John Bond could line up in the
Ryanair
as well, or not. So I'm sure we'll get sort of the McManus developments as the week goes on.
Yeah, or maybe as late as, I think Frank Berry was saying yesterday, they might decide with Factor File on basic confirmations on the 6 day morning.
Saturday.
And of course, you can only declare for one race at the Cheltenham Festival these days. They can't declare him for the Ryanair and then wait and see if.
Yeah.
We should probably wrap it up with a few horses to follow at Cheltenham. Liam, because Pete will just be thinking about the Craven by now and 2,000 guineas.
I've had my fun earlier on.
He won't play this game. He refused to play this game. But you, Liam, with all the intel too from Seven Barrows and across the Great Village of Lambourne, what are you liking for Cheltenham?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, I'm really hot on the chances of Wendigo for Jamie Snowden in the Brown Advisory. He's a Grade 2 winner this season. I think he won the John Frankham at Newbury back in November. He ran a very good race in the Corto Star at Kempton on Boxing Day. Didn't really... Going right-handed is not the... It is something that Jamie Snowden has alluded to, him not sort of winning the race. But he ran on third, finished well. Probably needs a bit of rain this week to enhance his chances even further. But I think he's a genuine stayer. He won at a canter at Ayr last time out. So I think he's primed and ready. And I'd say that would probably be... I know Snowden's had festival winners in the past, but I reckon this could be one of his biggest chances he's ever had going into the meeting.
Really?
I think he's I think he'll get even further in time as well. Could be looking at a potential Grand National horse in the future, really. He's got an abundance of talent, and I don't think we've kind of reached the ceiling of his ability either. So I think he'll go well in a very wide open race. A few others, certainly in the village. I think that Lambourne's probably got the biggest chance of winners this year than it's had in many years, certainly as I can remember as well. Nicky Henderson's obviously got a fantastic team going there. Obviously, it's a shame we obviously won't see Constitution Hill there, also Gino for that matter.
Yes.
But he's got a big chance. He's obviously got Lulamba in the Arkle. Old Park Star, who was brilliant in the Rossendon Main at Haydock, he's favourite for the Supreme, the opening race on Tuesday. He's got Django Bay, probably Henderson's biggest chance in a Gold Cup
for a long time
as well. So, and then he normally has one or two for the handicaps as well.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah,
such
Jericho de Repenay, maybe in
Jericho
the
de Repenay, yeah.
Bold, what's the horse?
Bold Endeavour.
Yeah.
I'm writing all these down.
Yeah,
the one in the Fred Winter,
Man Lager. Yeah. So, and then he's got, you know, he had two winners last year, and he's been in sort of decent form all season as well. So, it's interesting. It's going to be exciting for the village. I'm sure Warren Graytricks has got one or two. I think Heracles Westwood and Nick Schofield has got St. Irene in the Mayor's Hurdle, the Mayor's Novice Hurdle. So plenty to look forward to from the village point of view. But I just think from an overall point of view of the festival as well, it's every race. I mean, it seems a cliche saying every race is going to be competitive at a Cheltenham Festival, but there's, when you look at the markets at this stage to a lot of the races, there's 6-7 horses in each race, all within sort of, you know, 5-6-7s to one. So,
yeah.
And they're scattered around the country as well. You know, and even in Ireland, obviously, Gordon Elliott's had a great season. So I think it could be a proper wide open meeting.
Yeah, I think it's the most exciting Cheltenham Festival I can remember for a long time, because so many of those big races are open. Pete, you don't want to do tips. Do you want a few of mine? Do you want me to?
Lee, nothing would give me greater pleasure than to know what shrewd picks you've got for this year's Cheltenham Festival.
It's lovely, isn't it? I like Selma de Vere in the Triumph Hurdle. I like Munsif in the Fred Winter Charles Burns horse. One of JP's, Arocco, one of my big anti-post.
You're very pleased when you didn't go to Kelso then.
Very pleased, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Just one for me from you. I know while back you were very taken by Final Demand's performance.
Oh.
And you were very happy with the price that you took.
Oh.
What price was that? Again?
9-5.
Okay.
9-5.
Are you still as confident going into the festival?
On one of these programmes, Chris Cook, he ridiculed
me. I was on the same show.
You were on the same show.
Well, I just let him do the talking.
He wasn't either done with kindness or he just ridiculed me. Now, as it turned out, he was right.
Yeah.
Because the horse is a much bigger price now. I don't know. I wasn't wildly impressed with him at Limerick when he went over Christmas. And I thought he ran a terrible race at Leopardstown last time. Mm-hmm. So do I wish I hadn't backed him at 9-5? Yes, I do. Would I be backing him at, was he 72, 4-1 now?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Probably not. Will I take the money if he wins? Yes.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. But it's. I mean,
but thank you for bringing that one up. That was...
You're very welcome. There's always been in the back of my mind that. Yeah. But
I don't want just what I need people having a pop at me at the moment. It's just. Go on.
But no, listen, it's going to be a great week. Plenty to look forward to across the 4 days. And yeah, we're going to have plenty of coverage between now and then.
We certainly will. And Pete, Craven meeting soon.
Can't wait.
Thank you to Pete and to Liam. Thank you for watching. It has been a delight. Good luck at the Cheltenham Festival. And if you fancy becoming BHA chair, you know who to contact. Bye-bye.